Hysteria is brought to you by Fast-Growing Trees. Did you know, Alyssa, that Fast-Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with thousands of different plants and over 2 million happy customers?
I did.
They have all the plants your yard needs, like fruit trees, privacy trees, flowering trees, shrubs, and so much more. You know what, Alyssa? Have you ever tried to go to a nursery and, like, bring home a tree or multiple trees?
I have, and my car didn't really live to tell.
Yeah, it's like you become...
Neither did the trees, actually.
Yeah, you become like a, it's like a spectacle. And you're nervous and you're like, ah, dirt
you're
everywhere.
Like, hold on, I got it. Hold, let me put the seat down and push the seat forward and we'll roll down the windows.
Right. Whatever plants you're interested in, Fast Growing Trees has you covered and will save you that ride home from the nursery with a tree sticking out of one of your back windows. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to get your dream yard. Order online and get your plants delivered directly to your door in just a few days without ever leaving home. Their Alive and Thrive guarantee ensures your plants arrive happy and healthy.
Plus, get support from trained plant experts on call to help you plan your landscape, choose the right plants, and learn how to care for them.
Alyssa, what is one plant care lesson that once you learned it, you're like, oh, God, if I would have known this.
Oh, I mean, not to overwater.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I killed a lot of plants real quick overwatering. Like, there are actually plants that do not need that much water, Alyssa.
They don't even like the water.
No,
you're not, like, helping
them. They just
them.
Mold.
Yeah, they mold, and then the dirt smells bad. But you know what? If I had somebody at Fast Growing Trees to chat with, like, why are my plants getting – why are the leaves turning yellow? Why is this happening?
Why do I have so many gnats?
Oh, my God. Would have saved me – like, it would have saved a lot of plants' lives, I got to say. RIP to those plants that I killed while figuring out how to be a plant mom. Big yard, small yard, no yard. We've got over 6,000 plants to fit any space, from indoor plants to fruit trees to full-size privacy trees and more.
Their 14-point quality checklist ensures you're getting the best quality plants possible. Each plant is cared for individually based on their needs, from watering routines to the amount of sunlight, giving your plants the care they deserve from the time they start growing to when they ship to your home. This spring, they have the best deals for your yard, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get 15% off their first purchase when using the code Hysteria at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code Hysteria at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code Hysteria. Now's the perfect time to plant. Use Hysteria to save today. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
And we're in the same room.
Together.
Oh my God.
It's magic.
I am so glad you're here. I wish we were, they didn't give me the requested giant beanbag.
Which, or the sofa.
There's a sofa, but like, it's far.
It wouldn't work today.
Yeah, it wouldn't work today.
But we're still closer than we've been in a year.
We are going to be ardent beanbag advocates.
Yes, we are.
Between now and the next time you are here physically in studio with me.
Promise.
All right, so I have a question for you. Alyssa, on Saturday, the U.S. Coast Guard rescued 32 bikini-clad influencers from a sinking vessel. This is not a joke. This is a news
It's not.
Story.
We saw it with our own eyes.
From a sinking vessel in Biscayne Bay off Miami
that
NBC News is calling a yacht. They're calling the vessel a yacht. The capacity of the vessel was 5.
Right.
There were 32 people on it. Alyssa, does a 5-capacity boat constitute a yacht?
In no world
does
it constitute a yacht. And I'm not a yachter. Mm-hmm. Or whatever they call people who go on yachts. But it really feels like a speedboat.
What's the level of, how many people does...
So yacht, I feel like, needs to have two decks, like two levels. Do you know what I mean?
So I think the two digits capacity, 10 plus. It's,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and like maybe some sleeping chambers.
Maybe, yes, there needs to be a bedroom for it to count as a yacht. Alyssa, second question.
Yes.
Does the fact that our yacht girls are now speedboat girls indicate that a recession is coming?
It could be a marker. It could be an indicator, Erin. This is, they were really close to being on like a MAGA flotilla.
We run the gamut today.
It was a real cornucopia of news.
What is a gamut?
I don't know.
Look, could you draw a picture of a gamut?
Do you know what it is in my brain?
What?
It's the galaxy. I don't know why, but that's whenever I say the word gamut, I always think of the stars.
I picture like a roulette table.
See?
run the gamut.
So it really can. It's dealer's choice.
Right, exactly. Okay, so we have a lot that we talk about today. We get into the news talking about Texas trying to test wastewater for mifepristone because they want to make sure that nobody's doing anything with birth control or hormones or abortion medication.
While they slash EPA regulations and funding around water.
Yeah, there's other things in the water that I think we should be a little bit more worried about. We also talk about Mike Pence getting an award from the Kennedy family.
Which we appreciate for all its weirdness.
You know what? Sometimes reality sort of bends into a horseshoe shape.
Yeah.
And the two ends touch each other. And
that's
this is
what
one of those moments. We talk a little bit more about how the Trump administration is dismantling things that we took the government for granted for.
Things that are really good.
Things that are good. We also have a shout out to Janet Mills, the governor of Maine, who told Trump that she would see him in court.
For winning.
And then won.
She did.
In court. So good for her. Good for the state of Maine. We have an interview with Parker Malloy to talk about the new trans healthcare report that came out from the administration. Spoiler alert, it sucks and is weird.
And maybe isn't real.
And maybe isn't real. And it cites 404 file not found.
Which was, it is a must listen.
I would say if you submitted that as a paper in college, it would be sent back to you and you would get an F in the class.
You might get kicked out of college.
You might get kicked out of school because it's like, I think you used AI to do this and you're not supposed to do that. And then we talk about the conclave.
We're hopeful.
We're hopeful. And finally, some Sandy Petty. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that is turning the drinking water gay. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the water. And what Republicans are worried about, because I think that that's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
All right. So, Alyssa, last month, a bill was introduced in the Texas state legislature that would require wastewater treatment plants to test for harmful pollutants. Good, right?
You think so.
Okay. Read on, because this is one of those stories that it's like, oh, good. We don't want toxins in the drinking water. That's good. They want to test for hormones and chemicals found in abortion pills and birth control.
Wow.
They're going to test the wastewater to make sure that there is not hormones and birth control in the wastewater. This was introduced by Republican, of course, State Senator Brian Hughes, who claims that hormones and chemicals found in abortion pills and birth control cause a threat to children and pregnant people, despite the fact that the FDA has tested and proven that this pollution is not a concern. So the bill is part of a, like, wider tactic that the right is using to be like, oh, environment. There's environmental laws. Let's leverage those to attack access to birth control.
Right.
It borrows points from the campaign by the organization Students for Life, which we covered earlier this year.
Yep.
The vice president of that organization said, this is not because the environment was my first weapon of choice.
Allegedly.
Ugh. Ugh, Jennifer. It's because it's, I don't know if her name is Jennifer. It's because it's the one we have now.
Karen.
Environmental law has teeth. It already exists. And frankly, I'm for using the devil's own tools against them. The devil who wants a clean earth?
Well, it's so funny, Erin, because if we wanted to ever give them the benefit of the doubt, we couldn't. Because did you know that just last week, Trump cut EPA staffing levels to 1980 levels?
Okay.
Isn't that, like, for people who are so concerned about the wastewater, here's another little funny one I read about in the Mountain State Spotlight, which is in West Virginia.
Okay.
Do you know what they're doing there? Well, West Virginia's been working for years to get the toxins and pollutants out of the water from Teflon in Parkersburg, West Virginia.
And that that was the subject of a movie starring Mark Ruffalo.
Yes, it was. And guess what they did just a couple weeks ago?
What?
Cut the funding.
Oh.
For proven toxins in the water.
Okay, but here's the thing,
what?
Alyssa. You try to, you know, go to West Virginia, crack an egg. It's not going to stick to anything. The whole state is nonstick. It's coated in Teflon.
It is.
Not good for people, but, like, you know what? It's really easy for cleaning up.
All you need is a wet rag.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Okay. So this bill is pending in committee in Texas. If it passed, it could harm access to abortion, birth control, et cetera.
Yep.
I don't know how it's going to differentiate between, like, human hormones and the hormones we pump our agricultural animals full of in order to get them to produce milk.
It's a lie.
Well, I mean, like, How, why does it only matter if hormones are being used by people versus like animal hormones that like we maybe that might actually also be harmful to people? Like, well, I don't.
Right. Also, how would they differentiate from like people who put things like it just it doesn't make it make sense. Mm-hmm. Like we all take drugs. I take hormones. Mm-hmm. They end up in the water somehow. We all do.
I mean, if they really cared about babies and children and pregnant women, they would test the water for, like, Accutane.
100%.
Which literally can cause, like, if you take Accutane, which is, like, a skin,
yes,
a skin treatment medication, you have to, like, sign a contract that's, like, I won't get pregnant. You have to be on, like, a long-term form of
absolutely
birth control. And you have to, like, a pregnant woman touching Accutane could lead to fetal death or, like, severe fetal,
yeah,
deformities. Like, so why are we testing for, like, birth control, not Accutane? I don't get it. I don't know. Do you think that this could work, though, to sway liberals?
No.
What about dumb ones?
No.
Really?
I do.
Not,
I,
like, do you think, like, a MAHA, like, liberal-adjacent person?
Maybe, but I feel like they've been swayed by dumber things already.
Okay, so they're already on the swayable dummies.
The swayable dummies may be a problem, but I think that for everybody else, I mean, I think we all know we're all of an age where we grew up. I grew up next to the Hudson River, which was one of the most polluted waterways for years and years.
Is that the one that started on fire? Or was that the – no, that was the Cuyahoga
That
River.
Was the Cuyahoga.
Okay.
No, the Hudson hasn't caught fire, but there were problems with fish having no eyes there for a while.
Okay.
And we all know that there are bigger problems, and they're slashing and burning all of the funding that could help with any of these problems that Republicans have been on the side of for 30, 40 years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, Erin. I think this is a tough boulder to carry.
I just think it's let's look at this glass half full.
Okay.
Okay, glass half empty is like the default because these people are monsters.
Right.
But glass half full, what if Republicans are slowly like beep 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 backing into like early 90s environmentalism where it's like, "Oh, you know what? If we want people to have more babies, maybe we should pay attention to making sure the earth isn't poison."
You'd think so.
Like, but if they get there, like talking about using the devil's own tools against them, it's like, "Okay, you're going to look into what's in the drinking water." I am pretty sure that in Texas, they're not going to find that it's chock full of, like,
no,
mifepristone.
No.
Do that many people have ulcers there? Maybe. I would probably have an ulcer if I lived in Texas. but, you know, they're probably not going to find that in the wastewater. Whatever they find, if they're truly concerned about, like, human health,
right,
especially fetal health, health of women and children, then maybe they'll just be like, hey, wow, these oil refineries, they're doing some bad stuff.
Which would maybe be good because allegedly RFK Jr. is very concerned about pollutants, specifically in water.
Yeah. The thing that, like, scares me, so the glass, like, not just half empty, but just, like, there was only a picture of water in the glass,
right,
in the first place and there was never any water, is that monitoring wastewater could be a way, if done at, like, a small scale, it could be a way that people track whether individuals have used specific drugs.
Doesn't that feel hard?
I mean, you could, let's say you
how
just,
do you
like,
narrow it down?
You just go to somebody's house and you, like, it's just the same way in California they monitor how much water you're using.
Yeah,
like, could
fair
they,
enough.
They could monitor the water coming from somebody's block and then narrow down who they think, you know, could be using something. And it's very, like, Romanian to me, like Ceausescu-like-ish. Okay, let's move on to more weird news.
Weird? Like Mike Pence news?
Celebratory Mike Pence news.
Celebratory, yeah, unexpected,
yeah,
Mike Pence news. So, Erin, over the weekend, Mike Pence received the John F. Kennedy Profile and Courage Award for, quote, putting his life and career on the line to ensure the constitutional transfer of presidential power on January 6th, 2021.
Okay.
What do you think about that?
I mean, keep going. I've got many thoughts.
Caroline Kennedy and Jack Schlossberg presented the award, and in Pence's 10-minute speech, he did not mention Trump once, mm-hmm, not once. Pence did acknowledge he had differences with the Democrats in the room, but also struggles with his own party. He said, quote, I hope in some small way my presence here tonight is a reminder that whatever differences we may have as Americans, the Constitution is the common ground on which we stand.
Oh,
a little loaded, a little pointed.
I mean, the worst person you know made a good point, onion meme. You know,
I know.
Like,
but we'll give him credit for it.
That is literally like the threadbarest of bare bones thing that can hold whatever's remaining of our republic together is the fact, yeah, that Mike Pence is like, look, we all agree that the Constitution is a thing, right?
Like, we swore an oath.
I mean, I do think it's funny that the Trump family is so obsessed with the Kennedys, like obsessed.
Well, that's why I think it was like a great troll on the Kennedys' part.
Do you think that our boy Jack had something to do with it?
Jack Schlossberg. Though I looked back and their nominees over their awardees over the past like 5 years have been quite specific. Okay. Like 2 years ago, they did the five sister senators in South Carolina who the majority Republicans who banded together to try to save abortion.
Okay.
So I feel like they've been making some points.
Mm-hmm.
And like, but then I think that it's also interesting that Mike Pence had to have seen the past recipients and still was like, I'm in.
Yeah, and also, like, he showed up and accepted it and gave, like, a heartfelt 10-minute speech.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, okay, Mike.
And I guess they – I don't know how they opened up the Kennedy Library again, because remember, Trump had closed it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was glad to find out that this award was for his taking a stand on January 6th.
Yeah, specifically.
And not for his review of Mulan that he wrote.
Love that review.
Oh, my God.
You love that review.
So – I feel like if anybody is listening and they haven't read the Mike Pence review of the Disney animated feature Mulan, it's still available if you do some, like, I think you have to do a little bit of, like, moderate Googling to find it.
Maybe not. I feel like if you do Mike Pence and Mulan, it'll populate.
Right. You might find, like, an aggregated – but like, you need to find the original one for the full magic.
Right. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. He – from Mulan, it's funny because if I'm remembering correctly, he didn't take – he didn't take from there that there was, like, a pro-trans agenda.
Right.
Because it was about a person who was born a girl who, like, lives as a man in order to serve her, like, in the military and then becomes a girl again. He was like, no, women shouldn't serve in the military. Like, that was his takeaway.
Mike Pence. Was that back when he was, like, a DJ?
That was when he was a right-wing DJ.
Okay.
Like, he was a talk show host.
Right.
He was like a podcaster before podcasting.
I'd like to think of him more as a right-wing DJ.
Yeah, he's a right-wing DJ. What songs would a right-wing DJ play?
Proud to be an American.
But that's it? Over and over
I
again?
I feel like that may be YMCA now. I don't know.
Ugh, Macho Man.
Macho.
Time to say goodbye.
He did use that song, didn't he?
Trump?
Yeah.
Yeah, all
Macho
the time.
Man. Yeah, he did.
It's because because he's a drag queen. Donald Trump is a drag queen playing a businessman.
100%.
He is like, that's what he's doing. It's all a
He wears more makeup than I do.
He wears more makeup than a lot of drag queens. It's just like not as artfully applied. But it feels like he is, look, if I was an alien from another planet and I saw planet Earth, I would think that Donald Trump was like an art installation commentary on masculinity installed
Fair enough.
As like a giant project at the head of the American government. And like as a
giant cautionary tale.
Right. As an alien art history major who only studied Earth and knew nothing about history, I would be like, yeah, this is like brilliant commentary on like the dead end ghoulishness of the patriarchy. This is it. This is the end game.
It would smack fear into people.
Yeah, 100%. I think that the aliens would learn a lot from our art project of having Donald Trump being in his drag act being the president of the U.S. I wonder if Mother was there.
Oh, I bet Mother was there.
Mother was probably there.
She wouldn't.
Mother Pence?
Mother Pence. She wouldn't have missed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course not.
Especially since I feel like she hated Trump from the beginning.
She's kind of a Laura Bush figure to me.
And yeah, that's fair.
I think that like she... you know, tried to keep to herself. She was maybe conservative, maybe didn't think as much about, maybe didn't think other people were as human as her human family was.
But still had some humanity to her.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And sort of like held her nose with the like yuckier aspects of.
Yeah, because don't you remember? Where was it? She didn't shake Trump's hand at the funeral. There was some funeral she didn't shake Trump's hand. Carter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was right behind him.
Good for her.
Good on her.
Come on, hysteria. Laura Bush. Karen Pence, Laura Bush.
Either
one.
I kind of love Laura Bush.
Well, let's have her. We should have her on. I think that'd be fun.
She's like one of the more fascinating behind the scenes first ladies.
Do you have any Laura Bush stories?
So on 9/11, to deal with her anxiety about what was happening, she, if memory serves, she cleaned every window in the East Wing.
She cleaned every window?
She was cleaning windows.
Did birds run into the windows as
No, it's just, it was her way of just doing something monotonous that got her mind off of it.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. She cleaned all the windows
herself
with, like, a ladder and stuff?
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
Wow.
That was, like, one of the stories. I think she's written about it or talked about it, but it was one of the stories that the resident staff told us when we got to the White House.
Wow.
Yeah. Very nice lady.
Huh, interesting. Okay, let's talk a little bit about more ways that the Trump administration is dismantling the—
This is such a dumb one.
Yeah, well, the infrastructure that we— I feel like a lot of people didn't realize what the government did and is now seeing that a lot of the stuff that they did were things that we've taken for granted our entire lives.
Right. So this one in particular.
Yeah.
So, Aaron, the Trump administration has canceled federal participation in the 30-year-old Safe to Sleep program. Now, when I heard the name Safe to Sleep, I was not entirely sure what it was. Then I kept reading. The initiative started in 1994 by the federal government in collaboration with private organizations to bring awareness to sudden infant death syndrome, which, back when I was growing up, was a thing people talked about all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was like terribly scary, and new moms were always terrified of it. Originally named Back to Sleep, it increased awareness and access to education on how to prevent SIDS, including encouraging parents to have their infants sleep on their backs. The program was a success, and Aaron, deaths dropped dramatically from 4,073 cases reported in 94 to 2,226 SIDS cases in 2009. That is 50%.
That's crazy.
The organization expanded its mission under the new name Back to Sleep to include more kinds of unexpected infant deaths. So the program ran out of the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development's communications office, which was eliminated on April 1st of this year. The program's nonprofit partners will continue to carry out the mission, but INSID's budget and role distributing educational materials are irreplaceable. Aaron, what? All they want, J.D. Vance. How does J.D. let this stand? All they care about is people having babies. But again, to your point that you've always made, they want you to have them.
They want
after they get here.
Birth.
It's up to you.
Yeah, it's really fucked up because, okay, so SIDS is something that like is kind of a lot of times like babies that are SIDS deaths mm-hmm. died because like their parents fell asleep on them.
Yes,
and
yes,
fell asleep with them, and then the baby like rolled into like
right.
the corner of a couch,
suffocated.
Yeah, or something like that. And
terrible.
It's really, really awful. Like a true like SIDS death is a thing that can happen. You just put a baby down to sleep. They go to sleep and they just don't wake up.
It's awful.
And it's more likely to happen to boy babies. Like
really?
By order of magnitude. And it's more likely to happen to formula-fed babies. There's all these
really?
Things. Yeah. There's all – because they sleep more deeply.
So is this something that became – aware to new moms because of this program?
Yes. It's like you are, it is hammered into your head to the point that like if you go on a mom like message board,
yeah.
which I don't recommend because they're very strident. People are, if a mom is like, hey, like my baby and I are doing co-sleeping, everyone's like, you shouldn't do co-sleeping. You're putting your baby's life at risk. And like now like people, there's almost like a correction in the other direction because
yeah.
like, people are so scared of, like, putting their baby down, like, sleeping with their
sure.
baby in their bed because of, like, this SIDS, like, education thing that they sometimes won't, like, be safe for themselves, or they'll put themselves in a position where they have, like, they're completely sleep-deprived and they
yeah.
do something else dangerous. So now, like, they've corrected it to be, like, there's certain pediatric like disciplines that'll say like safe sleep 7. So if you're going to sleep with your baby next to you, here are the things that you have to do. No blankets. No, like it
right.
is hammered into your head. And I think that especially like in places where people aren't necessarily around people that have babies
right.
or they don't have a ton of support, not having this is not good.
Mm.
It's just oh God. What a nightmare and what a stupid thing to do. Although I will say, like, there's also – it's been so successful for, like, new moms that sometimes I'll see something on, like, a Reddit board that's, like, a mom will be like, I'm freaking out. I put my baby down to sleep on their back, and I went back to get them. They flipped over to their stomach. And, like, once they can flip over, the SIDS risk is lower.
Right.
But, yeah, it's, like, it's been a really successful information program, and it's a shame we're losing it.
What a bummer.
All right, let's end with a toast.
Okay.
Or an invitation to the gloating closet, if you will. One of our favorite broads of 2025, we're calling her a broad with the greatest admiration.
Totally.
A dame. Governor Janet Mills of Maine, who has been resisting Trump despite his concerted efforts to specifically single her out and punish
yep.
her and her state. A few weeks ago on the show, we covered how Maine's USDA was in jeopardy over Title IX violations, it's like such a stretch, and it's kind of boring when you get down into the minutiae. But basically, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins sent a letter, which Governor Mills compared to a ransom note written by his school child, informing her that the USDA was freezing funding for certain Maine educational programs, including suspending a school lunch program that feeds 172,000 kids in the state. Maine Attorney General Aaron Frey filed a complaint in federal court that said the USDA did not follow any of the legally required procedures to alter their congressionally appropriated funds. And all this was over trans athlete participation
right.
in sports.
Yep.
So because they didn't want like a single digit number of trans athletes
yep.
participating in theoretical sports, they were like, fine, 172,000 kids don't get food.
Don't get food.
Now Governor Mills is celebrating a legal settlement between the state and the USDA, and Maine's USDA funding remains intact. Mills won.
Way to go.
Way to go. What should other governors take from Mills' courage, Alyssa?
Well, the thing that's interesting about it is that the original confrontation happened in person during the governor's meeting, where she literally stared him down. He's like, see you in court. She's like, see you in court, which I think was kind of key to this.
But then he made a weird, like, gangstery threat to her. He was like, oh, yeah, I don't think you're going to be a governor for very much longer.
Yeah, he did. And guess what? Looks like she's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. This is something that's actually not political, that he's the one who made political. She just saved 172,000 meals for kids.
Yeah.
Like,
he handed her a win.
He handed her a win.
She
didn't back down. She was on solid. The other thing is, too, she was on solid legal footing.
Yeah.
So it was easy for her to be like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. It's funny because during his interview with Meet the Press on Sunday,
wow,
Trump was talking about it's. First of all, I think Donald Trump is a lazy person. I think he is really, really lazy.
Do you mean because he's never prepped for an interview in his life?
Never prepped for an interview.
He just has a stream of consciousness until we all forget what it was about.
He hates reading. He likes to show up and like be a star,
totally,
and then not worry about anything.
He likes
else.
Being on TV.
He likes people. Yes, he likes people handing him things. He likes people like telling. I don't think that he's actually like. He barks orders like a child.
Totally.
Barks orders, but also like a child. If everybody who is doing all the things for him left, he would just be really he wouldn't be able to do anything.
Right.
He is not somebody who I would consider self-sufficient.
No.
I don't think he's ever fixed a pipe. I don't think he's ever cooked
definitely
a meal.
Not.
I don't think he's
not changed a diaper.
He has not changed a diaper. I think he's fundamentally a lazy man. But during this, during the Meet the Press interview, he said something like, oh, you know, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. All my lawyers do this. All my lawyers
do
this.
Oh, when asked about a third term?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then one of the things that he said was like, we've been winning all these cases. We've been winning so much
None.
Winning. They haven't been winning.
They haven't been. They've literally won no cases.
He is so lazy that he's not even Googling. Are my lawyers lying?
Am I winning?
Am I winning?
No.
Is Donald Trump winning? He can't even Google it.
No.
Like, just what a lazy baby man. Anyway, on that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we have Parker Malloy. Hysteria is brought to you by Hiya. Typical children's vitamins are basically candy in disguise, filled with 2 teaspoons of sugar, unhealthy chemicals, and other gummy additives growing kids shouldn't eat. That's why Hiya created a superpowered chewable vitamin. While many children's vitamins are filled with 5 grams of sugar, which is known to contribute to a variety of health issues, Hiya is made with no sugar and no gummy additives. Yet it tastes great and is great for picky eaters. Alyssa?
Yes.
You've met Juniper, my daughter.
Cutest.
She is cute, but every meal is a fight. Every meal.
Really?
It's like,
a little eater.
Eat food, please. And thank you. I'm giving you the food that you like the most. Why don't you eat the food? You
right.
know what I don't have problems with? I don't have problems having her take her Hiya vitamin.
She's a good little Hiya taker.
She calls it her alphaba vitamin because they're green, pink, and yellow. And she calls the green ones the alphaba vitamins. And then the pink ones the Glinda vitamins. And the yellow ones just yellow.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's great. It's it fills most common gaps in modern children's diets to provide the full body nourishment our kids need with a yummy taste they love. It's non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, nut-free, and everything else you can imagine. Every single batch is third-party tested for heavy metals and microbials in a qualified GMP-compliant lab using scientifically validated testing methods, so you know the product is safe and nutritious. It's designed for kids 2 and up and sent straight to your door so parents have one less thing to worry about. Also, the little bottle it comes in is cute.
Yeah, it's
like a little yellow. It's like cheery and happy. And it's just, I know that that's like the least important thing with the vitamin, but just like
yeah.
the little touches. She takes it. It looks cute. No complaints. High is great.
And now, Erin, I don't have kids, but are yours good at eating their greens? Because Hiya now has Kids Daily Greens and Superfoods, a chocolate-flavored greens powder designed specifically for kids, packed with more than 55 whole food ingredients to support brain power, development, and digestion. Just scoop, shake, and sip with milk or any non-dairy beverage for a delicious and nutritious boost your kids will actually enjoy. We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, you must go to HiyaHealth.com/hysteria. This deal is not available on their regular website. Go to HiyaHealth.com/hysteria and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is a subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.
Welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that dreams to live rent-free in Stephen Miller's stupid bald head. I don't know if I want to live there, but, you know, I want to visit. I want to visit rent-free. Our guest today is the author of The Present Age, an award-winning newsletter about the media's impact on politics and culture and vice versa. Parker Malloy, welcome to Hysteria.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
All right. So last week, the HHS released a 409-page document about transgender healthcare that relies on retracted studies and disproven theories to recommend conversion theory as an alternative to actual gender-affirming care. Parker, on Monday, you published a piece about the mainstream media's coverage of the so-called report. Can you explain the issue you took with these outlets' coverage?
Sure. So, you know, the media's coverage of the HHS document, you know, it reveals several journalistic failures, in my view. You know, first, most headlines frame this as a legitimate scientific debate using language like questions evidence or casts doubt or urges therapy, which lends credibility to what medical experts are clearly identifying as conversion therapy in disguise. And second, these outlets failed to highlight the massive red flag that this document has no named authors. In any other context, an anonymous 400-page scientific review would immediately raise suspicions, yet many headlines treated it as authoritative. So, and third, most coverage buries the fact that this document directly contradicts the positions of every major medical association in the country. When the American Academy of Pediatrics immediately calls something inaccurate and misleading, that should be in the headline, not paragraph 12.
Mm-hmm. So you describe the document as propaganda. What are the telling signs for like a layperson that this is not a legitimate report?
Sure. So for one, the reason the document exists is it was commissioned under a January executive order that explicitly called transgender healthcare mutilation. So its conclusions were predetermined from the start. I think that should have been the big red flag. But beyond that, you know, there's the fact that it omits the points of views of the medical associations that, you know, that actually have experience with trans healthcare. And also, you know, again, it's anonymous. Mm-hmm. We have no clue who wrote this document. That should be a gigantic red flag.
Mm-hmm. I was seeing some chatter online that there were some indicators that this looked like it could have been written with the assist of AI. Did you notice that too?
There was one point where in their citations, it was just like 404, file not found, you know, and it's just like, wait a minute, why would
that
anyone
shouldn't be
who's
in a
writing
citation.
This? Yeah. So it seemed like they were using something that automatically pulled citations. Maybe that was AI. Maybe that was just some sort of formatting thing that they had going on. But yeah, speaking of which, the citations themselves were ridiculous. There were a lot of anti-trans blogs on there.
Okay.
You know, you had a fair number of those where it was just like some guy with an opinion that was anti-trans. And, you know, there was another one that was a post that was just recapping some online argument that the two trans people had.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not exactly scientific rigor.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because it reminds me of sort of a larger approach to science that we see, science and medicine that we see on the right, that they just trust that if it's written in sciencey language, that nobody's actually going to check the citations. Like, are we living in an age now where everything the Trump administration says, everything conservatives, anti-trans people say about trans people, are we going to have to just be our own, like, citation detectives?
I mean, basically, sadly, it seems like that's going to be the case. You know, one of the things that really bothers me about all of this is that the media, generally speaking, can call this stuff out when it needs to. It can be like, hey, Robert F. Kennedy saying that, you know, by September we'll know what causes autism. They respond to that with some, you know, earned skepticism. But that just doesn't happen in the world of trans healthcare. It kind of gets talked about where it's just like, you know, well, I may disagree with him on, you know, whether or not pasteurization is good for, you know, milk, or whether fluoride belongs in our water, or whether autism is caused by vaccines. But maybe he's got a point on this trans thing. You know, it's one of those things where it's like maybe people are just kind of going with confirmation bias on this one, and it affects how they respond.
So the report used language like exploratory therapy. Do you think veiling conversion therapy, like giving conversion therapy a new word, is working on Americans who consider themselves opposed to straight up conversion therapy?
Yeah, I think so. And it's not, they didn't necessarily invent calling this exploratory therapy. It's famously, there's a doctor in Canada named Kenneth Zucker, who he had his clinic shut down, where he essentially would put trans kids through this sort of therapy. And, you know, people will go, well, it's not like he was holding them down and electrocuting them. And, you know, it's not like, you know, he was doing all of these horrible torture type things. But at the same time, it's the goal of the therapy is to change someone's gender identity. And the big thing about this is that this is not new. For decades, doctors have tried to figure out how to make trans people not trans anymore. And it's, they've failed over and over and over. All that's happened is you end up with a bunch of miserable people who have their health care taken away and have a much, much higher instance of attempting suicide.
Have you noticed media's attitudes evolving toward transgender issues, or is it sort of like a Sideshow Bob in the parking lot full of rakes, just stepping on the same one over and over again?
Yeah, it's one of those things that I do feel it kind of goes the rake route.
Oh no.
You know, I feel like we're kind of in this weird space where trans issues generally are being kind of put on a back burner, or attacks on trans issues are being legitimized in conversation and in media and, you know, in law. I mean, as we're recording this, it was just yesterday that the Supreme Court allowed Trump's ban on transgender service members to go into effect, which the ban on it was written with clear animus. Mm-hmm. It was written saying that trans people can't be honorable, can't be honest, you know, all of these really horrible things. But it's just like, okay, that's cool. That's going into effect now. And I feel like there's this challenge that media organizations have where they don't necessarily know how to cover this at the moment. Mm-hmm. For years, trans people have criticized the New York Times, for example, and how it covers trans issues. The New York Times is repeatedly cited in this 400-page report. And it's one of those things that it's just like these organizations don't want to seem like they're being bullied by trans people into covering something differently. But at the same time, trans people are complaining about coverage because it's not fair, because it's not even-handed, because it gives, you know, shows deference to the RFK Jr.'s of the world, the Donald Trump's of the world. And I think that right now we're kind of at a really interesting point in society where we kind of have to reexamine how we talk about trans issues. I feel like there's going to be a push from conservatives to try to get news organizations to stop gendering trans people correctly, which was something that when I first started writing about trans issues, which was like 15 years ago or so, one of the big issues was that trans people would not be referred to with the correct name or the correct pronouns. It would be, you would see, you know, for instance, reporting on Chelsea Manning back when she was involved with, you know, her trial for leaking documents. After she came out as trans, a lot of organizations still referred to her as he and him and used her old name and stuff like that. And it took a long time to get news organizations to stop doing that, to start respecting the names that people give themselves, respecting how they identify themselves. And, you know, part of that argument was that, you know, you would have organizations saying, well, we're not going to refer to someone by a certain name unless they've legally changed it. Yet, you know, CNN doesn't have any problem calling Lady Gaga Lady Gaga.
Or J.D. Vance, J.D. Vance. Yeah, I mean, exactly. He did legally change his name, but J.D. isn't his, like, legal first name.
Right, exactly. So I feel like we're coming up to a really interesting and kind of scary inflection point where we're going to have to kind of see which way this goes. Whether media wants to try to be more inclusive on trans issues or whether it wants to kind of just follow the political winds.
Mm-hmm. You know, something I've found really interesting during this moment, interesting. Gender-affirming care is so popular on the right for cis people. On the right, like their gender-affirming care on the right, like enhanced breast enhancement, lip enhancement, fake hair on the guys, like all of this stuff is done so much by cisgendered people on the right. Do you think that there is a future where trans people and trans advocates can say, like, look, if you're going to ban gender-affirming care, I mean, and hormones, too. Like, so many people are on hormone therapy. Do you think that there's a future where the legal argument could be made that if we're going to ban gender-affirming care for trans people, like, we accidentally are going to ban it for cis people as well? Like, there's no way to actually enforce who gets to access gender-affirming care.
Sure. Well, that's actually the core of the argument in the Supreme Court's case involving, I believe it's Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care for minors, was that the same medication and same procedures that are being made illegal for trans teens are still totally fine for cisgender teens.
Right.
And so there's this argument that it's like you're clearly targeting one group. And I don't see a day where breast implants are going to become illegal across the board. You're going to have people smuggling, you know, silicone bags across the border.
It's going to be like boob speakeasies where you go in wearing like a fedora and a trench coat. You come out with D cups or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, you know, you'll have people will bring this up all the time, you know, when they talk about trans healthcare for teens, especially, they'll be like, well, they shouldn't be having surgery, which the number of trans teens who have any sort of surgery is very, very tiny. But every year there are 15 and 16 and 17-year-old girls who get nose jobs or boob jobs or, you know, like all of these things that no one's talking about. No one's trying to outlaw a 16-year-old girl getting a boob job.
Mm-hmm.
Is weird as a lot of people might view that,
right.
You know. But at the same time, it remains legal because people realize that they're like, okay, medical decisions for minors typically should remain between doctor, the patient, and their parents if they're minors.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to trans teens, there's this idea that the government needs to step in to block something.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, I think that one of the biggest tells with all of this is that you'll have, you know, an administration coming in and saying, we want to ban this, we want to ban that. But it's not as though they're doing this where they're like, our concerns are just that they're kids and that maybe they'll regret this someday. And otherwise, they totally support trans adults. No, they're trying to take the rights away from trans adults, too. It's
mm-hmm.
clear that this is just specifically, we don't want trans people to exist in this world,
mm-hmm.
Which is not great as a trans person. I gotta kind of admit, it's not been super fun to have that be the giant driving force of the right in the past few years, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I hope people can see through it, because that's what needs to happen. They need to see through what the administration is doing, you know, what their goals are. Even if someone has hangups about, you know, healthcare for people in their teens, maybe they need to go, well, wait, the people that I'm agreeing with just straight up don't want trans people to exist. So
right.
Maybe I'm aiding their goal, their broader goal.
Right, right. And the people the people that this hypothetical person is agreeing with also lie about everything all the time. Like they're never giving you a good faith argument. They're never moving in good faith. And I think that's an important thing to remember too. In addition to the present age, what are some outlets that you think our listeners can go to for what you would consider reliable, fact-based, and fair coverage of trans issues that doesn't treat the other side like a legitimate scientific source?
Sure. I think, you know, as far as the bigger outlets go, I think Rolling Stone has done a fantastic job. They just actually put out a story, I think it was this morning or yesterday, about that HHS document, and I was reading it earlier. There's another outlet called Assigned Media, which is run by this trans man named Evan Urquhart. He is phenomenal, and their website is assignedmedia.org, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a newsletter by this trans woman named Erin Reed called Erin in the Morning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that one's really good. I see that one all the time.
She dives into things that 10, 15 years ago, I would have been diving into that totally took a toll on my mental health. So I'm so thankful that someone else is doing that kind of stuff so
uh-huh.
I don't have to.
Uh-huh.
And I hope she's taking care of herself, because it can be rough.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly diving into these documents and these arguments that, like, you don't exist and stuff like that. But her outlet's a great source for information on trans stuff.
Mm-hmm. Parker Malloy, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for writing The Present Age. I also want to give a quick shout out before we go to break to my cousin Ken, who has been through a lot this year but is graduating from high school with honors. Ken is a trans kid, and I'm so proud of him.
Thanks for having me.
Hysteria is brought to you by ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol. We've all had to pay that $20 no-show fee for a morning workout class after a night out with the girls.
ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this product, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Do you have a ZBiotics story, Alyssa?
Well, you know, Aaron, long time ago when I came out to L.A., Caroline Reston wanted us to go out and have a drink. And it was a little hysteria happy hour, and she suggested I try the pre-alcohol. And guess what? I can only, now in my middle age, my middle years, I can have one drink before I get a headache. But I took the pre-alcohol, had two drinks, totally fine the next day. Totally fine. Up and at 'em.
Wow.
No issues.
Party animal. Spring is here, which means more opportunities to celebrate warmer weather. Before drinks on the patio, that tropical vacation, or your best friend's wedding, don't forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great the next day. Go to ZBiotics.com/hysteria to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use hysteria at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/hysteria and use the code hysteria at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who remain hopeful. And at this point, I think we should put in a trigger warning. If you have problems, or content warning, if you have issues with or trauma around puns, you should probably tune out for this next segment.
It's going to get punful.
It's going to get punny. A new season of the Vatican's Next Top Cardinal just started, a.k.a. the Papal Conclave. We're recording this on Wednesday morning.
I've been watching since I got up this morning.
I mean, there's nothing to watch.
I'm in California. No, because I think it's fascinating. It's like all the pomp. I love and live for pomp.
Love, it's invisible pomp.
Like it is. Well, now it's invisible. But this morning there was like some processing happening.
Right.
And there was, you know, they started the music and then they just shut it down.
It'd be funny if they all went into the conclave in, what is it, Sistine Chapel?
Yeah.
And then they all became a goo. And when they opened the doors, a bunch of butterflies flew out.
That would be
miraculous. I would turn into a Catholic again.
It was. Do you know that they were saying that the conclave is actually just a prolonged prayer? It's just days of prayer so that they can get to where
God
wants them to be.
Hollywood is lying to us again.
Yeah.
Not only is Stanley Tucci not an option.
No,
but there isn't,
sadly.
There isn't scintillating dialogue.
No, they're praying. They're praying on the Pope.
Ugh, boring.
Also, it feels a little bit like a caucus to me.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, they've got, I picture them in the corners, and they're like, they all have their little teams, and then they realize, like, the one corner doesn't have people, so then they go with other. It's like ranked choice voting.
Interesting. Okay, so here's how the process works. Okay,
yes.
The cardinals gather in the Sistine Chapel under an oath of secrecy, and all of the staff present in the Vatican, all the way down to the janitors, also take an oath
mm-hmm.
of secrecy.
Yep.
There are currently 252 cardinals, but only the 135 of them who are under 80 years old are eligible to vote.
Seems like a good idea.
Maybe we should do that here. I mean, like in Congress. I don't mean like people over 80 shouldn't vote.
I knew what you meant.
Right. We should have a top age. Like any good reality show, they have no access to the outside world, including phones and the internet. But unlike good reality shows, there's no cameras.
Sad.
So there's no internet. They're taking it so seriously that they are deactivating the mobile phone signal in the area and using signal jammers to prevent surveillance and external communication. Why can't the Trump administration do that when they're discussing sensitive military attack plans?
I think it would benefit the world if they did.
I mean, it seems like
the funny thing is that is actually how the government works.
But why don't they do? I mean, like, are they dumber than a bowl of sperm?
They
like,
are dumber than a bowl of sperm, Aaron, because they actually they're so dumb and so uncurious that they're like, I don't know. Talking about Yemen attack plans is so boring. I need to sit here and text while I do it, which is what they do.
Okay. Well, in the Pope vote, they vote in one or several secret elections until a winner reaches a 2/3 majority. So that actually kind of sounds like a I feel like I played a version of this game when I was like at sleepovers when I'm a kid.
Yeah.
There's like some kind of like secret vote game where you have to.
Yeah, it makes sense.
The Vatican indicates the process with smoke. Black means no pope.
No pope.
And white means new pope.
Pope.
Popening.
It's very clear.
It's very clear. There's an old saying, he who enters the conclave a pope leaves it a cardinal, meaning that it's rare for the favorite to come out on top. So,
which is true.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the front runners.
So, Aaron, everyone is really into current front runner.
Karaoke Pope?
It's Karaoke Pope, 67-year-old cardinal from the Philippines, Luis Chito Antonio Tagle, a.k.a. the Karaoke Priest, has a similar leadership style to Pope Francis. He opposes abortion, but he has advocated for less harsh attitudes towards single mothers, gay people, and divorce.
You want to hear something funny I saw about him on social media?
J.D. Vance could learn something from him.
Right. Well, I hope he doesn't sing.
I hope he doesn't get close to him.
Pick up a karaoke mic and sing. So LifeSite News, which is like for batshit insane people.
Yeah.
LifeSite News posted a video of him singing Imagine as like slander. Like he's imagining no religion. And like all the comments on this was on TikTok. All the comments were like, let the Filipino man karaoke. Like it was
let him karaoke.
It was so funny. And then I also saw a really funny TikTok that was like, here's the Vatican if Karaoke Pope gets elected. And underneath it showed like two really good Filipino singers at karaoke singing singing Hearts Alone.
Till now.
He has a good voice. He has a good voice. I mean,
I never really got until I found you.
Met you.
Whatever. It was close.
So, yes.
I'm going to do that at karaoke next time.
It's a challenge. I'm going to just say that.
Believe me, I just heard it as a challenge.
Attempting to do a Wilson Singer song is like very, very tough. One thing I like about he has a really good voice. You're not Catholic, right?
I am not.
Okay.
The Mastro Monaco side is, but I am not.
Okay. So I grew up Catholic, and one of the worst things as a Catholic was when you're in a—well, there's a lot of really—
Fair enough. Let's stipulate there's some problematic
day-to-day
parts.
Things that you encounter within the Catholic Church as a regular person is when you'd go to Mass in a church that's not your church and the priest isn't a good singer because the priest has to do, like, these chants.
Yeah.
And if he's not good at singing, it's just like—
Hard.
Oh, like 10 minutes of him being like, na 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 na. And it's like, oh, it's so bad. So having a pope that's good at singing, huge plus for me.
I would love a singing pope.
I would love a singing pope. I mean, they all have to like chant and sing and stuff. But like, he's my favorite.
Okay, ain't no shame in bringing skill to the game.
So he was the only one that I'd really known about until I started like doing research for this episode.
Yeah.
But that we also have Italian cardinal. Okay, first of all, these names keep getting more Italian. I just want to
set
this up.
Wait until we get to the end.
The end is the most Italian. It sounds like I went to ChatGPT and I was like, can you please give us
some popes.
Give me an Italian. Yeah, give me some pope names in ChatGPT.
Give me the pope garbage pail kid.
Yeah. Italian cardinal Pietro Parolin.
Yep.
He's 70. He was Pope Francis's bestie.
Mm-hmm.
He's slightly more moderate. He lacks pastoral experience, but makes up for it with a deep understanding of diplomacy. The New York Times called him a plotting Italian with a famously inscrutable poker face. Alyssa, did you have any of those in your family?
I was going to say no, and no one would ever say I had a famously inscrutable poker face.
A plotting Italian?
I
can picture a plotting German.
Of plotting it. Plod, no, I can't.
Plot, not plotting.
No,
plodding,
plotting. Like plotting.
But like the country that invented opera?
And no.
I can't imagine. That's okay.
So he's a unicorn.
Okay. It's interesting. Okay, now let's get more Italian with the names.
Okay, Cardinal Matteo Zuppi, a.k.a. the street priest. He's one of the most progressive options. He is welcome to the LGBTQ members of the church. His modesty is similar to Francis's. He rode a bike around Bologna, and he became the Italian city's archbishop in 2015 and forwent the more lavish accommodations available to him.
Okay.
Okay.
I like that.
Into Zuppi.
Okay. Okay, so then we have Cardinal Michael Czerny. He's a Jesuit like Francis. We like the Jesuits. So they might not want to elect two in a row.
Right.
He's active in advocating for the environment, which we...
we need right now.
Which we like. We've also got...
Aaron?
This is the...
It's the ChatGPT option.
This is the most uber-Italian name I've ever heard in my life. Okay, say it, Alyssa.
Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa.
Pizzaballa.
Do you know that I literally went to the internet to listen to interviews where people talked about him? Because I'm like, that couldn't possibly be how the name is pronounced, despite
Pizzaballa?
How phonetic it looks. Pizzaballa.
Pizzaballa.
He's only 60, so young. Very, very young to be Pope. He's considered a wild card, and many of his positions are not known. However, he leads the church in Jerusalem and has spoken out against the Gaza war, condemning both sides. And in the early days of the war, he offered to exchange himself for child captives taken during Hamas's attack on Israel on October 7th, 2023. Now, that to me is a Pope walking the walk and talking the talk.
Offering to exchange himself for captives, for children? Wow.
God bless.
Pizzaballa.
Pizzaballa.
You have to stop making fun of your name.
Well, we weren't making fun of it.
Yes, we were.
I mean, it's just completely caricaturish.
I mean, it's like when Luigi Mangione first made the news and everyone was like, hey.
Luigi.
Yeah. There's also a few conservatives that are in the running. I don't really care about them. I want a progressive pope. I want a pope that's going to make J.D. Vance question whether the pope is Catholic.
Correct. And we also just can't let, we need a pope that we cannot let J.D. Vance get near.
Oh, no. He can't get near trophies or popes anymore.
Nope. No more. Sorry. No.
So at the end of the conclave,
yeah.
we don't know what really happens. Like, we don't know if they like hug or whatever, but I like to imagine that they say to the winner, will you accept this rosary?
Stop it.
And he takes it, and he's wearing a ball gown, and then they all come out.
And then they do the puff of smoke?
Yeah.
And then it happens.
I learned recently that the reason that the puff of smoke is white is because they add a special chemical to it.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, so, when you set different kinds of salt on fire,
yes,
and you get different color flames?
It's not like magic. It's not like Pope magic, where they're like, now we're putting it in. It's like a specific chemical. I know.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm into it. Do you have a favorite based on name, vibe, or any other facts? We talked about Karaoke Pope. We like them.
I think Karaoke Pope, I feel like it would be interesting. He'd be the first Asian Pope,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is always, I think, a new fresh face is always a good thing.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of into Tagle.
Yeah. I live in a heavily Filipino neighborhood.
And is there, is your neighborhood participating in Fanta Pope?
No.
Do you know what Fanta Pope is?
What is Fanta Pope?
Fanta Pope, Aaron, is what is currently happening on the internet. It is the fantasy football of the conclave.
Okay. Are people gambling on this?
A lot.
I feel like people, okay, we have a, okay.
So far, but here there's, a, but there are like interesting things around the gambling. So far over $17 million has been bet. People bet on who the Pope's going to be, what name the Pope takes once they're Pope, and like how long the conclave will last.
Okay.
Right? So the poly market is showing three contenders. However, the leading three contenders, so last time, 2013, the market put Pope Francis at only 4%. So if you're going to bet on something, the thing to bet on right now is how long the conclave will last.
Okay.
Because in the last 10 conclaves, they've all been less than 5 days. And the last three, I think, have been fewer than 3 days.
Okay.
So I feel like you won't make a ton of money, but you won't lose money if you bet on how long the conclave might last.
Right. Okay. So, and then after, so when they pick a pope.
Yep.
They give out the final rosary.
Yeah.
They pick a new name, right?
They do pick a new name.
So all of these guys, he's not going to be Pope Tagle.
He's not going to be Pope Tagle.
We're not going to have a Pope Pizzaballa, which is.
No. And I couldn't
a minus in
remember
that
Pope Francis was Jorge Mario Baglioni or something like that.
Okay.
And he became Pope Francis because he was the first Pope Francis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like so exciting to see what the new Pope could pick.
Yeah. But I just think that there should be an exception. If Pier Battista Pizzaballa wins, he should be allowed to be Pope Pizzaballa.
Pizzaballa. But in general, I just feel like they're doing a good job. I think that this is fun. And also, I was listening this morning. The Holy See gas is that this may be a slightly longer conclave.
Interesting.
Yeah, because there are a lot of contenders with a lot of different people in different camps.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, I also heard that that Pope Francis really filled up the cardinal bench with people that were sort of in line with his.
Yes.
His, yeah. So I'm like, I love this. I love this. I love that it's become a meme. I think
it's
that there's
great.
I think that like right now people are so tired. My like overarching theory about the memeing of the conclave is that I think that like there's so many things that are like deliberately designed to be memed and shared and performed over and over again. And the fact that there's this thing that is secret and old and weird and that we have no access to,
totally.
I think is like so grounding and enticing, even though I'm like, I kind of think organized religion is bad and I don't think we should do it.
Yeah, but you know what? But here's the thing about this. I feel like they're trying to make it a little bit better each time. Right?
Yes.
Pope Francis tried to do some good stuff.
Right. And I don't want to discount people who find comfort in organized religion, but I just say, my point is, at no point in human history has it been a net good on the world.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Like, yeah, I mean, maybe you have some faith that something that has literally never been good ever.
Might be better.
Maybe it'll work.
Maybe.
Maybe it'll work this time. Maybe it'll be moving in a different direction. I do think that the Catholic Church can be an important counterweight to some of the like rightward shifts that we're seeing in a lot of countries, and being focused on if the next pope is actually focused on defending the most vulnerable people, then that's a good thing. And I think that the Captain Planet Pope would also be fun.
Pizza Bali.
Pizza Bali is not Captain Planet Pope. Cardinal Michael Czerny is Captain
Planet.
I know,
but I'm just saying, I just had to say Pizza Bali.
I know. We can still talk about him if he doesn't get to be Pope. He'll still be a cardinal.
100%.
He's only 60. He's going to be around for a long
life to live.
He might have a second. He might have a second papal.
A second go around.
A second conclave. I also read that they don't want the Pope to be too young. They don't want him to be in
Pope for forever.
Yeah, like JP2.
I know, but it's also like maybe they should just have term limits on poping.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, Benedict, I think, was the first pope to resign in, like, hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's the only good thing that I think he did, but whatever. Yeah, I think that he'll be – I think that whoever gets to be pope, you know, I want to see him, like, really, you know, make J.D. Vance uncomfortable.
So uncomfortable.
J.D. Vance always looks uncomfortable. He always looks like he's kind of, like –
But in particular.
Yeah. He's holding in a fart. And also trying not to sneeze at the same time, and he smelled something bad. All right.
Literally, like, had to blow out your
eardrums.
I'm
sorry. I can't
No,
not...
it just made me laugh. I literally just pictured blowing out my own eardrums.
We're talking about Catholicism. We have to – J.D. Vance is going to catch some strays. It's just the way that it is.
He brought on himself.
There are also some conservative contenders that would hinder – Francis's progress, possibly set it back. There's Cardinal Peter Kodwo Opaya Turkson, who is 76. There's Cardinal Peter Erdo, who's 72. Mm-hmm. Cardinal Fridolin Ambongo Besungu, 65.
Yes.
And Cardinal Robert Serra, who's 79. Missing from the list of frontrunners is Donald Trump's preference for who should be Pope.
Himself?
Timothy Dolan. So, like,
oh, right. I saw.
The
That's
Archbishop
right.
of New York, who is an asshole. He's a fucking asshole. But even Timothy Dolan, one of the primary assholes in a Catholic church that has gone in America very sharply in the asshole direction in the last 10 years, even when he was asked about Trump's joke about becoming the Pope himself, he called him making a fool of himself in Italian. Yeah.
Well, that's encouraging.
It's like, yeah.
So, at least he can see it for what it is.
At least he can see it for what he is. Also, when Trump made reference to himself as the Pope and tweeted from the White House account an AI-generated photo of himself as
outrageous.
The Pope, a former prime minister of Italy referred to him as a clown.
Because it was a clowny thing to do.
It was super clowny. What's the Italian word for clown?
I don't know.
The thing that, like,
I only know words that I think are actually pretty bad.
Yeah. The thing that I'm thinking, like, when it comes to more conservative popes, you know, we've had conservative popes in the pretty recent past. I am worried that a conservative pope will put too much emphasis on what women are doing with their bodies and not what humanity is doing to the planet. And emphasis on excluding gay and trans people from the church. Pope Francis was famously open to gay and trans people. More open for a pope. Like,
as open as a Pope's going to be.
Yeah. If he were, like, in my group of friends, he would definitely be the least welcoming of, trans and gay people. But as a Pope, he invited a group of trans people to have, like, a meal with him.
Yes.
He has he's specifically been kind of like, I don't really care if priests are gay. Like, who am I to judge?
Right. Remember when he had all the weird comedians come visit him?
Oh, yeah.
Right? It was like Conan O'Brien and Stephen Colbert and I don't know.
Colbert is like big time Catholic.
He's big time Catholic.
Stephen Colbert.
Like, it was like, it's not that they were weird. It was more just like, I felt like it was just an odd gathering.
Yeah. Stephen Colbert could be Pope. Isn't he technically eligible? He's a male Catholic.
Who wouldn't vote for Stephen Colbert to be Pope?
I mean,
Pope?
Probably most of the people in the conclave.
The conclave would be a cut up.
Yeah. So who will be Pope? We'll find out. Hopefully by next week, and we'll be able to move forward with this guy wearing a cool outfit
and a new name, making
J.D. Vance uncomfortable. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss conversations like this one, and share with a friend so your friends won't miss them either. No gatekeeping hysteria.
Don't gatekeep.
It's not nice.
Share and care.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sani Petty. Hysteria is brought to you by Helix.
How you sleeping these days, Erin?
Alyssa, I'm going on year 4 of being constantly bothered in the night by a human.
Okay.
Before that, I was constantly bothered by a cat, but I could shut the cat outside.
Yeah, you can tell the cat to stop.
I can't, like, put the baby in the hall and be like,
no,
but I'll feed you tomorrow, baby.
The baby with the cat out in the hallway.
Right. So it is really important for me to sleep on a mattress where, when I'm woken up, I can lay back down.
Yes.
And go to sleep easily, because if not, like, I would not get any sleep if I couldn't fall back asleep, because it's just, it's rough. It's rough in my house.
Rough in those sleep sheets.
Thank goodness that I have a Helix mattress. Everyone's unique. Everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from. Each is designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. You can take the Helix sleep quiz and they'll find the perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. I took the quiz. I got the Midnight Lux model. And because I wanted something that wasn't too hard, too soft.
And Goldilocks over there.
Yeah, something that would, like, accommodate me tossing and turning and sometimes having a dog, sometimes having a baby, sometimes having a cat, sometimes having a husband. Just, like, everything just, like, cycling in and out of the room at night. And I needed something that could accommodate that. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including models with memory foam to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side, models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions.
Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress. Plus, your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door free of charge. Go to helixsleep.com/hysteria for 27% off site-wide and free bedding bundle with any Lux or Elite mattress order, exclusive for listeners of Hysteria. That's helixsleep.com/hysteria for 27% off site-wide and free bedding bundle with any Lux or Elite mattress order, exclusive for listeners of Hysteria. helixsleep.com/hysteria.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who think it would have been brilliant social commentary for Anna Wintour to invite Jack O'Connell to this year's Met Gala. Have you seen Sinners?
I have not seen Sinners, but I get the joke.
Okay. Well, you know the joke?
No, but I'm like, I get it. I get the reference.
You know what happens?
Ish.
Oh, man. You got to go in just blind.
I know, but that's the problem when I don't watch things out the gate.
Yeah.
You know?
You should still see it.
Oh, I'm going to.
You should.
100%.
I went on Friday, and I saw it last Friday. And it was like a 2:40 p.m. showing in the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah.
I like went with one of my mom friends. Packed theater. 2:40 p.m. on a
really?
Friday.
Really?
Packed.
But honestly, the best time to see a movie.
It was great. Everybody there was like, I took time off work to be here. Like, they like made time to, like, go see Sinners on a Friday afternoon. Or they were like, you know what? I really want to enjoy this movie.
Yeah.
I don't want like a weeknight or a weekend crowd where people might have like gone out for a couple drinks before.
No, I get that.
It was like,
there are times it's like there are matinee movies, then there are nighttime movies.
Yeah. I want to go see it at night too.
Like, because it's a totally different crowd.
I'll go see it again.
Yeah.
But I wanted to,
but you needed to have the immersive experience on your own terms first.
Yes. But it would have been funny if Jack O'Connell was at the Met Gala, because everybody on social media would have flipped out. They would have been like,
a missed opportunity.
You should have let him in. Don't let him in, Anna. Okay. Before we get to Sani Petty, we have some announcements for the class. Alyssa, do you want to kick them off?
Sure. A brand new episode of Polar Coaster with Dan Pfeiffer just dropped. If you love Dan on Pod Save America, you'll want to check out this exclusive show where he goes full political nerd.
This week, Dan digs into questions from the Discord community, his take on David Hogue's clash with the DNC, a reality check for a listener trying to reach their MAGA relatives, and his surprising pick for the James Harden of the Democratic Party. I don't know if that's good or bad. Our very own producer, Caroline Reston, is there to moderate it all. Oh, Caroline, you're on this week? Love that.
You're on every week.
Love that for you.
To ask Dan questions or listen to Polar Coaster, subscribe to Friends of the Pod at crooked.com/friends or on Apple Podcasts.
Over 1 million listeners around the world are already obsessed with Shadow Kingdom, God's Banker, Crooked's newest podcast. All episodes are out now, so you can binge the full story from start to finish.
As host Niccolo Mangione investigates the mysterious death of the Vatican banker, uncovering a web of mafia ties, a fascist secret society, covert Vatican ops, and a missing $1.2 billion, he interviews spies, prosecutors, and the last person to see Roberto Calvi, the banker, alive, all to answer one question. Who killed God's banker?
Okay, there is no there's no more perfect thing to listen to.
Right now.
Right now.
Like, it's, first, it is just excellent on its own merits, but mm-hmm. like right now,
you
extremely
can.
Perfect.
Okay, so they've like knocked out cell phone signals around the conclave.
Yes, they have.
As we discussed in the last block.
Yes.
So you cannot know what's going on. The smoke is all we know.
That's our only signal, literally.
Just like fill your conclave, the conclave-shaped hole in your heart.
With this podcast.
With this podcast. Because for now, we're not going to get any information until we know that there's a new pope.
No. So enjoy yourselves.
You can binge all episodes of Shadow Kingdom wherever you get your podcasts or on Apple Podcasts. Okay, now let's get to Sani Petty. Alyssa.
Yeah.
You kick us off.
I'm Sani this week.
Okay.
Okay, so you saw the Met Gala, right? You saw snippets of it.
It was so well done.
This was like gorgeous.
Everybody was on theme.
Right, but have you heard of the Debt Gala?
No. Tell me about
okay,
it.
Okay, so some activists in Brooklyn years ago started something called the Debt Gala, Aaron, which happens a couple days before the Met Gala and raises money to relieve medical debt. Yes,
I
true
love
story.
That.
A lot of local New York politicians show up, and it has so far raised $3 million to relieve medical debt in the city.
What?
Isn't that great?
And that's like the kind of medical debt that you can buy for like
yes.
pennies.
Yes.
So like somebody who got like a $30,000 like surgery and couldn't pay
exactly.
for it.
Exactly.
And now, like, some debt collectors
they're like,
the debt.
They'll take, like, $1,000 for it. But they're just doing God's work all over the place. And it is super – it is, like, a lively, raucous event. It is super joyful. And I just thought on the heels – so the fact they've relieved $3 million, it's just so interesting because this was the largest – it was the most, like, lucrative Met Gala on history – in history.
Wow.
And they raised, like – over $30 million. They might have raised $70 million. It was either 30 or 70. I don't remember. But just think what they could do if, like, they just did a little collab with the Debt Gala.
Wow.
Right? So I thought that was a nice little kicker to the Met Gala.
That is a nice little kicker to the Met Gala. I thought the Met Gala this year, look, it's always, like, interesting. I love the Heavenly Bodies themed one.
Yep,
I thought that
yep.
one was so well done. This one, like,
it was sharp.
The clothing was exquisite.
Totally.
Like, it was like looking at, like, a parade of, like, buildings, like, architectural marvels.
Absolutely.
Like, people were just, like, like Janelle Monáe was, like, an art exhibit.
Did you see Regina King?
Yes.
I mean, exquisite, like, sculptural, so beautiful.
And also, can I just say the men this year?
Brought it.
They were amazing.
Handsome.
And it made me think, like, oh, my God. Like, we need to, like, abolish the tuxedo. We need to ban it from red carpets for a couple years. And men need to figure something else out. Because
yeah.
the guys at the Met Gala figured something else out. They looked amazing.
It was. I enjoyed it in a way that I think that it actually elevated fashion itself for the first time in, like, many, many Met Galas.
Amazing.
Yeah. What about you?
Okay. I guess I have a Sani, too. So, you know, I did an AMA on the Discord yesterday, on Tuesday, and it was really fun, but I got a lot of questions to the effect of, like, what do you do with your anger? Like, how do you compartmentalize and stuff? And I really love, like, I've said this before, but I really love, like, listening to podcasts that have nothing to do with current events and gardening. Yep. And I have to say, I've been a fan of this podcast for a long time. You Must Remember This just completed their new season. Yep. I deliberately saved every episode and didn't listen. I didn't listen, and now I'm going back to the beginning. So I have a whole season of You Must Remember This episodes.
It is so funny you say that, because I have stockpiled Good Food, my favorite Evan Kleinman podcast, because I needed – it's like TV shows. Like, I will just enjoy it more if I can just click play, and it just goes from one to the one, and I know that I have so many that I can listen to, but same thing.
Yeah?
A lot of cooking podcasts.
That's – yeah, so it's – You Must Remember This is a good one, and then there's this one called The Rest is History, which is, like, always at the top of the history charts.
Oh, I have to listen to that. I haven't listened to that.
They're two British guys, so it's very, like, British-centric. They just got done doing, like, a four-part episode arc on the year 1066, and I'm like, yawn, like, whatever.
Is that Eleanor of Aquitaine?
No, it was, like, the run-up to the Norman Conquest.
Okay.
Which is, like, super interesting, but I just am completely unfamiliar with it, and the way they talk about it is as though – it's, like, as to an audience that has been learning about it in school.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just – I'm like, I need to read a book on this by myself before I come and revisit this. They did a French Revolution one that was amazing.
Ooh.
But my favorite is when they do things about American history because they're, like, nice and removed from it. And one of them was, like, an actual scholar of, like, the 60s in American history. They're doing one on Imperial Japan right now.
Ooh.
That's, like, super interesting.
Okay, I need that. That's going to be good.
So it's very – it's, like, British-centric, but they go around the world. They did something about, the Belgian imperialism in Africa that was, like, heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And so sad, but it taught me so much about a part of history that, like, we're not taught about in school.
Yep.
And we don't necessarily just, like, learn about by moving through the world. And it's, like, so good. So You Must Remember This. I have a whole season of episodes. And I'm, like, only in episode two I just started. So I'm, like, my whole, like, next week.
It's how I felt about The Pit. I had 15 episodes. It was, like, such a dream.
I've got dissociation, like, queued up. I am so ready for it. So that is my sanity corner this week. And I think we should make more, like, podcast recs on this pod.
We can do it every week.
We should do, like, a dissociation station.
Because dissociation station.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
I just made it up. And if you guys can't tell,
you're,
like,
good on the fly.
Thank you. If you guys can't tell, listeners, I have very bad allergies this week.
You do?
All of the
pollen.
You're
a little snuffly.
All of the pollen has exploded. Yesterday I went out and I was, like, pruning my basil because it was starting to bolt, as they say.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And I, like, you know, there's, like, little flowers and I pull them off so that the basil keeps, like, producing leaves. And I came inside and I sneezed for, like, 30 minutes. And American.
It's tough.
We need to toughen up when it comes to allergens. I'm just going to say that.
But no, the allergens are so much worse.
I know. They're so bad.
I've seen so many allergy doctors on TikTok who I, like, vet, you know, because I'm like, this could be a quack.
Yeah.
But all of them say the pollen is mutating. It is, like, super sporadic.
Uh-huh.
And it's worse than it's ever been.
Well, maybe I shouldn't have turned my lawn into a meadow. Alyssa, thank you so much for being here in studio.
In studio, which we have to do so much more
often. You flew across the country during dangerous times.
To see us.
Out
of New York City. I had to ditch Newark.
I mean, thank goodness.
Thank God.
Because that is...
That's crazy times out there.
I feel like if I'm flying into Newark, if somebody who loves me knows I'm flying into Newark...
You just shouldn't right
call
now.
My mom because I'm not okay.
No,
like,
it
that
is...
Like, that is a cry
it's
for
a mess.
Help.
It's a mess.
It's a cry for help. Alyssa, thank you for being here. Parker Malloy, thank you so much for the enlightening interview. Listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com, and there will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusives like This Fucking Guy, our video series. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Claire Fogarty is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seguin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Claudia Sheng. And thank you to Daisy Cruz and David Tolles for production and marketing support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.